Jersey is the world.
Hi, everybody. It's Chris Gethard. Welcome to another episode of New Jersey is the World. I feel so lucky that I get to intro this episode, tell you what's going on. Say thanks to everybody who came out to my show in Booton. Me and Business Casual performed at Booton Coffee last week. It was so nice of Booton Coffee to have us. And that's one of the best stores. That is one of the best coffee spots going. Please support my friends over at Booton Coffee. Thanks to them for having us. And I know I speak for Carson when I say thanks to everybody who came out to Ghost Hawk Brewing. Both of those events took place on a night when the rain was dangerous, to say the least. So thanks to everybody for showing up and supporting live acts all over New Jersey and local businesses all over New Jersey. Speaking of local businesses, we have another in our very infrequently recurring series, Small Business Spotlight. This is where I talk to different people running small businesses all over the Great Garden State. And I was so psyched to interview Sean from Fat Moose Comics. Fat Moose Comics is a store that I go to on a semi-regular basis. It's the first comic book store that young Cal Gethard ever steps foot in. Feels so good that I get to tell you all about it because it's a very special store. And as I got to know Sean, I realized it's actually a store that has its place in history here in our state, and that he thinks very hard about how to make it as special a place as it is. So I say it in the course of the episode. If you're a comic book fan, you got to check it out. Even if you're somebody who's not a comic book fan, I know that you have young people in your life and they need toys for birthdays and Christmas, and they might be somebody who gets into all the stuff that Fat Moose is doing. So there's so many reasons to stop by. When you go, you will know Sean as soon as you see him because he's there most of the time. Tell him you found it from your old pal Gethard in the interview on New Jersey is the World. And everybody enjoy these thoughts on not just what it's like to run a comic book store in 2024, but also what it's like to deal with something, you know, an industry that relates to fandom, and specifically a fandom that, especially with the explosion of comic book creators being in New York City for so many decades, has long had a lot of roots in New Jersey. What it's like being up close and personal with that fandom. Really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you do too. Hi, everybody. It's Chris, and I'm so happy today to be talking with someone who I have come to know through my patronage of his establishment. And as I've come to know more about the establishment, I realized I did not totally understand that I actually have been spending my money in a place that has a very significant history. You see, if you listen to the show, you know that I moved out to Morris County over 4 years ago. And one aspect of my life as a longstanding, really obsessive fan of comic books is that anytime I move, I have to find the place where I'm going to get my comic book fix. And the place I found near me, there are a few stores within spitting distance, but one that I really took to is in Whippany. Anybody who knows Route 10, you will know exactly where it is when I tell you that it's right near all those weird old trains on Route 10. It's spitting distance from those old weird trains. It's Fat Moose Comics, Whippany. And I have to tell you, just the experience of going in reminds me of when I was a kid and I first discovered comic book stores, because the entrance to Fat Moose is one of the most amazing things about it. It's up on the second floor. So you open a very nondescript looking door in a very nondescript looking parking lot. And what you enter is actually a stairwell that is filled with amazing blacklight posters and blacklights. And it does such a good job of making you feel like you're being transported into another world, which it, for my money, is one of the things that any good comic book store should do. And as I've been going there over many months, dropping in from time to time, I've gotten to know the guy who runs the joint, Sean Hendricks. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Chris, how's it going, man? Thank you for that introduction there. That was lovely.
It's really true. Even if you're not a comic book fan, I would say this, and again, I'm always, any business that we feature on the show when we interview businesses is someplace that I'm very happy to stand by and push. So, but I would say there might be people out there who find things interesting about this conversation. Maybe they're not necessarily comic fans, but I will also say, if you if you want to experience a piece of New Jersey history and comic book history, which we'll get into, you should drop by Fat Moose. And we all know there will be kids in your life you need birthday gifts for. There will be Christmas gifts. There are reasons to stop by, and the experience of the store, it's truly an old school store. In fact, there are rumors that Fat Moose might be the oldest comic store continuously running in the country. Is this true?
This is true. Fat Moose Comics may not be the oldest store, you know, as far as when it opened, but it's the longest running. We're coming up on our 42nd anniversary. April 1st, 1982, Elon Strasser, the $1,000 in a dream and a couple short boxes of comics opened up the shop. And
because we should...
Well, it's changed hands a few times. I'm sorry.
I interrupted.
No, that's okay. I'm the fourth owner. But yeah, it's Fat Moose Comics is the longest running brick and mortar comic shop in New Jersey.
I feel like anybody out there who's not familiar with comics might be sitting here and going, 82, that I know comics have, is like Superman came around in the 1930s, but for people who are nerds, they know for a lot of comics history and for many, many decades, they were sold at newsstands and convenience stores and kind of in random places that distributors could get them to. And it was really only, I believe, in the 1970s that the sort of direct market comic book stores started. And there weren't that many in the beginning. So 82 is right in the early wave of when comics started to have specific stores dedicated to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I discovered my first comic shop in 86. I was going to high school in Booton. I grew up in Lincoln Park, but we didn't have a high school, so they'd ship our asses to Booton. And there was a comic shop on Main Street, Pegasus Enterprises. And that was the first time where I was like, oh my God, like I was there almost every day after school. I'd miss the bus and I'd run up Main Street and hang out for hours and hours to the point where finally, years later, he gave me a job. He's like, you're always here, so I might as well start giving you stuff to do. And that's how I got my foot in the door in the whole selling comics industry.
I love it. Just to shout out some names, like, and one thing about comic book stores is, you know, it went from being, you could get them in newsstands to the specialty shops. I want to talk to you about kind of where the industry is at, because the sense I get now is that when comic book stores close, there are not too many new ones filling the void. It feels like for every owner that ages out and retires, it doesn't, you know, I know there was a great one in Scotch Plains that just shut down. I know that when I grew up, there was Middle Earth on Bloomfield Ave in Montclair. I could walk to there, but my dad came with me once and he didn't realize, like, I was all about, where's the new copy of X-Factor? Where are my X-Men? Where's my Spider-Man? But my dad looked at a rack that had a bunch of R. Crumb type stuff on it and was like, I don't think you can go here anymore. But then he would drive me sometimes up to the Livingston Mall. There was a place called the Superhero Shop. And then sometimes a place that's been very big in North Jersey that I want to talk about the relationships between the different stores, but Cedar Grove, Time Warp was really big. And I think that one, you know, Kevin Smith had a Time Warp banner and Chasing Amy and everybody was like, oh my goodness. And, you know, the owner just passed away and the people from New World Manga and Livingston took over. Like, just being a comic fan, you start to know all this circuit of stuff. So hearing that you worked at a store in Booton, it's not surprising. I'm sure you have the different stores you used to drop by as well. How did you come to own Fat Moose in the way it's changed ownership a couple times?
Well, real quick, you mentioned Time Warp. That actually started off as Fat Moose 2.
Really?
Yeah, Elon opened a second location. And one of my regular customers, Gene, he was running it for him. And then after a while, I think...
I had no idea.
Yeah, Elon just didn't want to, you know, maintain two stores. So he shut that other one down and it became Time Warp.
That's... wild. So not only, like, Time Warp does have a reputation. I feel like a lot of comic fans outside of Jersey have heard of Time Warp. Some of that is because of Kevin Smith shouting to the hilltops about it. Some of it's just, it was a great store for many, many years. And hopefully it still will be. But hearing that Fat Moose had their fingers on that from the start is not shocking. Not shocking.
Yeah, that was, he had the two spots. But the way I ended up here, going back to when I was working at Pegasus in Booton, he retired in 2002. And at that point, I was still living in Lincoln Park. I was just going to start going to Zap Comics, which is in Wayne. It's an excellent store. They're friends of mine, you know,
good guys. I've been many times.
And, but the owner of Pegasus is like, well, before you sign up, you know, with Zap and all that, go 10 minutes up the road. It's my buddy Elon's store. It's called Fat Moose, you know, and I had never been here before. It was in a different location. It was in the Pine Plaza. But, so I went in and, you know, looked around, started talking to Elon, and we hit it off. So I decided to make that my comic shop. Instead of driving 10 minutes to Zap, I would drive a half hour to Fat Moose. And then he moved to this current location in 2009, I believe. And about 2010, he hired me just to work on the weekends so he could take a day off and watch the Giants or whatever. And so for years, I was just here once a week. Occasionally, a few days, if he wanted to take a few days off, I'd run the shop. And then he sold it in 2014. He moved out west. A guy named Scott bought it. Scott had opened a year prior a store named Highlander Games in Booton. And it was predominantly a gaming store that sold some comics. And we're a comic shop that sold some games. So he combined it. He had it for 2 years, and then he didn't want to deal with two stores. It's a lot of work. One store alone is a lot of work, you know. So he sold it to Matt, who worked here. Then Matt had it for a few years. And then at the end of 2019, Matt just kind of got burned out on it. And through a text message, he told me, I'm going to announce tomorrow. It was a Friday night. I was actually playing a gig. I'm a musician. I was playing a Christmas show. And he said, I don't know how to tell you this. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to announce tomorrow that I'm closing the store after the holidays. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not making money. I'm going to declare bankruptcy and all this. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. Let me get back to you. You know, I got to go up on stage and play now with Christmas carols and shit and pretend I'm not having a heart attack inside. So after that, I got on the phone. I made a few calls and it took care of a few things and moved a few things around, you know, Jersey style. And I took over the store. He told me on a Friday night he was going to close. By that Saturday evening, I had a plan in place and I had moved things around. And I took over ownership January 1st of 2020. The most magical year.
Take over a small business.
Holy shit.
So, I mean, I do have to ask how you survived, because just in general, that story lets me know, you know, there are prior owners that found their way out because it was too much work, not enough profit.
Yeah.
On top of that, you take it over right before the pandemic. So, I mean, those are two separate things that are knockout punches. So how do you reinvigorate the place to take away that overall stress that prior owners felt? And how do you survive the pandemic on that?
I'd just taken over the store and then we had to close and nobody knew what the pandemic was going to be, when we could reopen, if we could reopen. They stopped producing comics for, you know, like 2 months. They just stopped. So nobody knew what was going to happen. And I would just come into the shop once or twice a week and just tidy up the joint. I had, you know, box holders who have accounts here, so they had books on hold. So I reached out to every single box holder, said, hey, you know, you got some stuff on hold. Is it okay if I run your credit card, just to tide me over, you know, until we figure out what's going on? My landlord was really great. He cut the rent in half. He goes, you know, just give me half the rent until you can reopen. So that helped a lot. We had a live auction. A friend of mine does a show called Cooking with Stupid, and we did a live auction here, auction of some, you know, vintage comics and things. My close personal friend, artist Tom Rainey, did a gorgeous Batman piece, an 11 by 17, black and white, like fully rendered, gorgeous Batman. We auctioned that off. I think we got almost $800 just for that alone. So the auction helped. And then I got sneaky about things because we're upstairs. The door's in the back. Nobody can see us from the street, really. So I was running it like a speakeasy. I tell my customers, I'm going to be there, you know, tomorrow, like 12 to 6. You know, if you come by, knock on the door, you know, give me a secret knock, I'll let you in. We lock the door behind you. You can shop. If anybody official comes by, you know, look, you know, seeing what's going on, you're an employee and we're doing, you know, we're doing inventory. So nobody needs to know. So I kind of had like secret, you know, little sales going on.
So you kept the core group intact.
Yeah. I would tell them specific times, like, all right, you know, I'd almost schedule people to come here because everybody just wanted to get the hell out of the house.
Of course.
So this was a cool little secret spot to come and hang out, you know?
I'm so thrilled you survived. I moved to the area in May of 2020. And right when things opened up was the first time I dropped by. And there's so much to talk about. The first thing I want to say is that Fat Moose has a quality that's really, really hard to verbalize, which is that certain comic book stores you go and you are going and you're shopping and you're maybe buying some books, you're maybe buying some toys, whatever you're going, but you are spending the same amount of time there as you might in a different store, but you do walk away feeling like, oh, that's a special place. Point being, this is a place that you started driving a half hour to instead of the 10-minute drive as a patron. What do you think adds that quality to a comic book store, and how do you foster it? Because you have it.
Well, I mean, step one is just don't be an asshole, really. I've been to so many shops over the years. You know, I used to travel a lot as a musician, you know, be out of town, go down south a bit, go up north, and mostly just around the East Coast. But I'd always visit whatever comic shops I could find, you know, because I just love to see. And this was before I ever had any intention of owning this place. I was just going as a fan of comic shops and the experiences. And so many places, they're assholes. Like, they don't welcome you, or they look at you funny, or God forbid, you're interrupting their magic, the gathering game, and, you know,
the gaming comic connection. I was just explaining to my wife the other day, my kid just discovered Pokemon cartoons, so I took him to Bearded Dragon, which is a gaming store in Bernardsville, and it was great, and they had a whole kids game section to get them into the entry level games, but there were also a lot of magic guys hanging out because there were tournaments there that weekend. And no offense to my brethren in the gaming world, but there is a weird, some people cross over, but there's a comic nerd, gaming nerd divide at times that doesn't get spoken about much, where I'm there with my 4-year-old and some of these guys, I had to be like, hey, can you move over so my kid can see the games behind you? Because some of these guys are just getting going, talking about magic with each other, and they don't even realize, like, I should step out of the way and let the toddler look at the shelves. So I already love where you're going with that.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't do any gaming. We don't sell any.
Which is rare these days, too.
I know I'm leaving money on the table by not selling Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic. I know. But I also don't care, because I get to be a comic shop. Like, there's, you know, every comic shop now, they almost look like cookie cutter. A wall of pop vinyls. Here's the wall of manga. And here's, you know, here's all our individually sleeved Pokemon cards taking up an entire display case. And all that. I just don't want to do it. We used to do some gaming in here. And then when Matt took over, he made a deal with Scott that Highlander would phase out all of their comic book stuff, because they're 8 minutes away from us. Mm-hmm. And we phased out all of our gaming stuff. And when we were never happier than that. I mean, I could and I should carry some of it. I don't know. I don't know why I want to die on this hill, but I just don't want to carry Pokemon and stuff. I don't want
to. It does add to the magic of Fat Moose, though, if I'm being honest. And I'm not, again, not trying to disparage. We're all nerds. Like, look, I look the way I do. I grew up the way I did. I've played Magic. I've enjoyed it. But I was never a total gaming guy. And there is something really refreshing about, I can take my son to Fat Moose. The last time I was in there, I brought him and his friend down the block was over, and I realized the friend had never been to a comic book store. And I said,
oh, they had a blast.
In the car. They had a blast, but God bless you. I thought they were going to destroy the entire, I thought every rack was going to get tipped over. Those two were so giddy and manic. But I will say, there is something for me as a dad, knowing, oh, if I go to Fat Moose, I can talk to them about the different books and the different toys they're seeing. And there's not going to be a table full, no offense to the gaming guys, like, there's not going to be some gaming guy who gets a bad hand at Pokemon and starts shouting curses in front of my 4-year-old because he flips out.
Right.
Like, there is a gaming aspect where it can get loud, it can get aggressive. And sometimes you go to the comic book stores that have both. And I go, do I want my toddler seeing kids like 15, 16-year-olds shouting, or even worse sometimes, as we know, like a 55-year-old having a meltdown at a 15-year-old, which is another
thing.
Again, not trying to talk too much smack, but I love that Fat Moose is a little bit more of a temple dedicated to the one thing, which is comic books, superheroes, and all the things on that family tree. It's an awesome store.
Yeah, I have no problem with gamers. God bless their hearts. I don't have the patience for it. And it takes away retail space. It can give a bad impression, you know, somebody's dealt a bad hand and they're freaking out. And I just don't like the vibe of it. I've seen too many comic shops that they dabble with it and they have one gaming table. A few months later, second gaming table, third table. Now all the comics are getting marginalized and pushed to the side so they can make room for more gaming. And if that's what works for them, that's great. But the good thing about owning this place is I could do whatever the hell I want. And I've decided I don't want to do any gaming stuff.
I also have to ask you too, because I feel like I've become someone, I drop by, what, once every 6 weeks you'll see me. I'll grab my kid and we'll go up there. But I have to feel like I might be the type of customer you're starting to see more of now, which is that I no longer buy books every week. I no longer have a subscription pull box. A lot of people out there read comics digitally now. You can do it while you're, you know, I can read comics digitally when I'm in an airport terminal and my flight's been delayed and I go, let me see what they have on there. Also, I'm starting to understand now that I own my home, I'm like, this is why my parents were always mad that my comics were all over every surface in our house. Like I start to get it. But I also know that I drop by because my kid is, he knows the name of every Marvel character because of the MCU, and that I can drop by your store and you've got a really well-organized kids rack where I'm like, I know exactly where to send him, where I can go, buddy, pick out five things from there. And I know that they've all been safety checked and grab that. And then I also want to give you a shout out. You have a really, really fantastic section of new toys, but also multiple cases of like old vintagey stuff that he sees and flips out where I'm like, we're getting that. We're getting the weird little thing. And some of this stuff you'll have priced at $3, $4, like very accessible prices for kids. How has the MCU affected things? How have digital comics affected things? Is it an overall pain in your ass? Is it a positive in that it increases the overall enthusiasm, even if it means more people who show up less often but buy more stuff when they do show up? I'm wondering how that affects comic stores in general.
Well, the digital comic stuff, not so much. I mean, yes, they're very convenient. If you're traveling, instead of, you know, you don't want to drag a short box with you, you know, you just have everything on your tablet. But it really didn't impact the industry that much. Everybody thought it was going to be the death of comics. Everybody's going digital, but there's something about a physical comic. I don't have to tell you.
It's the smell.
The fetishization of it too. You know, you get a nice copy and you read it and then you put it in the bag and the board, and you tape it up and you alphabetize everything. And there's a routine to it. There's a ceremony to it almost, you know? So the digital stuff doesn't bother me. I have some digital comics on my tablet. I don't prefer to read them that way, but you know, yeah, if you're traveling or something, it is definitely convenient. But I don't think it really impacted much. Not anywhere near what they were saying it was going to do. You know, everybody was like, this is it. It's all over. Print is dead. Not yet.
That's awesome.
As far as the MCU, it gets people through the door, you know, but watching a movie is so much more passive and easy to do than to sit and read. That a lot of people just would rather, you know, and once they see a movie, oh, I just saw Thor fighting the Hulk. Why would I want to sit and read, you know, and look at these static images when I've just seen it, you know, for real or whatever. So I don't know that the MCU and the superhero movies in general, they may get more people through the door, but not in a significant way where it's like, oh, we just dropped, you know, the Marvels and that suddenly my sales of Captain Marvel are through the roof. It not really.
I would have to imagine they might give you a slight bump in toys and not too many people that get hooked for years.
Yeah, the thing with toys though is you can't compete with Target and Walmart and these places. They get everything
right.
sooner than we do. They get everything cheaper than we do because they're buying in such large quantities. So I don't buy a lot of current new toys, you know.
No, it's one of my favorite things about your store is the cases of old toys. And it's just like my kid, he has a whole toy bin that's full of stuff just from Fat Moose. And it's like, here's some weird old fan with Thor, like a Hulk fan that has a button where a fan spins, and a Thor one where I'm like, this looks almost like it was a promotional item that you came across at some point and then resold. And it's an extremely well curated case.
We just redid it actually. I put even more, all that stuff, all those little $2, $3, $4 pieces are all from my house. Because
it's wild.
Being a geek my whole life, I can't go anywhere without hitting the toy aisle. You know, you go into Walmart to get toilet paper, I'm going making a beeline for the toys, and you know, all those little blind box figures, and you got to get all of them, and you know, end up with doubles and triples. So once I took over the store, I started to really look around my house. It's, you know, we're in a two-bedroom condo, me and my gal, and she let me have the spare bedroom upstairs for my guitars and my comics and my statues and things. But it's getting critical up there. So I just started bringing in stuff from home, those little pieces. Cause also somebody comes in with a little kid and I've got an action figure for $24.99 still in the box, but you know, the kid's going to rip it open anyway. Or here's a similar figure for $4. That's already out of the case, you know? So the parents are going to gravitate towards that because it's cheaper, you know?
Yeah. Like you have stuff that's already, it's not like you're selling anything that's beat up, but you're selling stuff that's like, oh, it's lived in. It's out of the box. It's
out of the box. You can tell. I always open all my toys.
when he wanted those little fans, I was like, all right, you want these little battery-powered fans with Thor and the Hulk on top. I know somebody's already pushed that button. It's okay for the three-year-old. He was three at the time. It's okay for him to go and play with that for a while. And if he drops it on the floor, I'm not going to go, why did you make me buy it all? It's a really, really great vibe. And which is not to also say that you don't have that other stuff, that you don't have the super cool, high-end, collectible, put it on a shelf stuff as well. But it's, like I said, from the stairway with all the posters on up, it really is. Like, if you are someone who's hardcore into comic books, not only do you have all the stuff they want, but you also very often have like a handful of laid back people having conversations about it. But you have the kids section, you have the collector toys, you have the kid toys, you have the posters. It's really great. And I know I keep saying it, but I feel really lucky that I found your store, because you, like you said, you start to find the cookie cutter template, and the amount of times I've moved in my adult life and you find stuff where you go, here's the one that's become effectively the extension that's trying to compete with the toy aisle of Target. And you can feel that versus here's the one where it's like, no, people will hang out. And if you might get in a conversation in this place about some tertiary X-Men character here that goes on for 45 minutes where everybody's laughing because the other handful of people in here, like you might overhear two people talking about, you know, the relationship between Polaris and Havoc over the years. And all of a sudden there's a half dozen people making cracks because every single person's got an opinion on Havoc and Polaris. And it's a great vibe. It's a great vibe.
Yeah, I love the conversations we have here. And speaking of the vibe, you know, everybody always complained about those stairs. It's 17 stairs straight up to get here. So it was always just none of the previous owners ever finished painting everything and all that. So when I took over, I painted everything and I told the owner, Fred, I'm like, listen, everybody hates the stairs. Let me turn a bug into a feature. Let me fix the stairs. He goes, what are you going to do? Is first of all, I'm going to recarpet everything. And secondly, I'm going to paint everything black. And he goes, wait, what? I was like, Fred, you got to trust me on this. So yeah, I painted everything black, put up the black lights, got those Marvel reproduction of the vintage posters. Because to buy the real ones, they're insanely expensive. So they did these reproductions. I framed them up, had to drill them into the walls because I don't want them taking a walk on the way out. You know, so they're drilled into the walls. And yeah, and then I wrapped the banister with all that tape. That needs to be rewrapped like once a year. It takes a long goddamn time. But yeah, the black lights, now everybody loves the damn stairs. People come in and take, oh, can I take pictures? And the landlord brings people here just to show them, look what he did with the stairs. So, you know, God forbid I move out of here or die or whatever, the next tenant's going to have a lot of painting to do to cover all that black.
I'm telling you, kudos to you, because if people used to hate the stairs, I would go so far as to say that the stairs are now part of the magic. Like walking up that tunnel of blacklight posters, my kid stops every two steps and he's like, Daddy, that Silver Surfer. Daddy, Green Goblin. Like he's getting amped up. It's like the trailer the store.
I just swapped out some of the posters yesterday to just change it up. You know, I've got 24 posters and maybe I can put about 8 or 10 up there. So I like to rotate them. But yeah, that's the thing. The vibe is important to me because I'm here 60-something hours a week. I wanted to make it into the kind of store that I would want to hang out in, hence no Pokemon and all that stuff. And the cool 70s vibe, as a child of the 70s, you know, I was born in 72. So everything's black light and lava lamps. And, you know, as you come up the stairs, I've had the beads in the doorway and the main entrance.
Yeah.
And then, one of my customers was like, what year do you think this is? What's next, a lava lamp? I went out the next goddamn day and got a lava lamp. And I've got little lighting effects around the store. You know, I always appreciated mood lighting, you know, and I try to give the store just a vibe. Again, I always enjoy hosting because even as a kid, when I had friends come over, it was like, oh, look at this thing. Isn't this cool? And check this out. Oh, check out this band I just discovered. I was always manic, like, look at this. And isn't this great? And now I get to do that all day long. And I'm such a comic geek that my customers know if I recommend something, it's because I truly think it's awesome. I'm not just trying to sell an extra copy of some bullshit. You know, and I'll tell them all the time, buy this comic, take it home and read it. If you don't like it, bring it back. I'll give you store credit as long as it doesn't come back, you know, ripped up or anything. And I've only ever had one book come back. But no problem. But my track record's pretty damn good as far as recommendations.
Yeah. It's really great. And you, I'll also say too, because you and I started, we would chat when I would come into the store, and I realized that is kind of the general rule, is that if somebody's down to chat, you're ready to go. And I realized even with the kids section, when you realized I was bringing my kid over, you'll generally know, like, you know, that Turtles one has actually got a really great writer behind it. Like, even the kids stuff, you know, the heads up on, like, the ones that also are going to be entertaining for you to read, lean this way, Dad. And I'm like, that is valuable, valuable advice, and much appreciated. Now, we are a New Jersey-focused podcast. I love talking, you know, we've talked to, one of the regular series we do is with small business owners, but it's been bakeries, people who run mobile cinemas where they'll go set up at your house, like things that are all over the map, you know? And I love that I get to talk to you, New Jersey's longest running comic book store. I do want to ask this, and this was one that I wonder if you'll have a perspective on. It might be a reach, and feel free if you're just like, dude, you are reaching a little far on that one. I could take the note, but New Jersey and comics, I do feel like comics were a New York industry for most of their history. Really, a lot of it has shifted to Los Angeles only in the past 10 years. DC and Marvel have moved a lot of their employees out. The Marvel bullpen infamously was New York-based for many, many years on Madison Avenue. And I do feel like when you start to read a lot about the history of comics fandom, a lot of what became this whole culture of comic cons and these big, massive events started with kids in the 60s and 70s from Long Island, New Jersey, and New York meeting each other and writing letters and writing each other's addresses down when they'd see their letters in the back of the books, and forming these little fan societies and fan clubs and starting their own fanzines to discuss comics. And a lot of them were people from our area. And I wonder if that still has any element of truth to it. Like, if you get a sense that North Jersey in particular, with its connection to New York, if you feel like, oh, yeah, I have customers who have been buying comics since the 60s or 70s, or I see generations where they get passed down, or if you can still feel any of that, the birth of fandom was in this area, if you get any cultural sense of that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like you were saying, it's only recently that everything shifted out to LA with, you know, once they started doing all the superhero movies and everything. So Marvel and DC just moved out there to consolidate. But the New York experience is always, that's why as a kid I gravitated more towards Marvel comics actually than DC, because they took place in New York, in Queens, in Brooklyn. You know, DC had Metropolis and Central City and, you know, these made up places, but the Marvel universe took place in our world. You know, like, there's the Statue of Liberty, there's the Chrysler Building, so I always enjoyed that. And yes, with everybody back before everything went digital, you had to go into the studio in New York. That's, you know, with the bullpen, everybody worked in that spot. Now you can just do it at home and email it in or whatever, and email the files. But yeah, New York was definitely, and you feel that in those comics back in the day, especially when they draw themselves into the comics. You know, next thing you know, Jack Kirby's walking down the street or Stan's over there. You know, those were always fun.
You start to read some of those stories about early fandom where you realize it was such a small culture, that some of these kids would just look in the phone book and go, oh, let's just write a letter to Jack Kirby. Or other crazy stories about early fandom where you start to hear some kid in Jersey realizes that one of the comic creators they read lives the next town over and just goes and knocks on their door. You hear some crazy stories back in the day before people, you know, a lot of these artists in comics, these were contract guys that just cranked it out. And they were just used to, like, cool, what's the next gig? What's the next gig? And sometimes you hear stories about early fandom where these teenage kids would just go knock on somebody's door and go, are you really the guy that draws the Flash? And you'd go, yeah. And they'd go, you got any old art we could have? And they'd go, yeah, get it out of my house. It's taking up too much room. And you go, oh my goodness. Now that art, original art from 60s era Marvel DC stuff is probably selling for thousands of dollars. And they were just kind of giving it away to kids. And actually, fun fact, so Carson, who is the guy who produces and edits every show that New Jersey is the World put out, growing up, I would go to his house all the time. He had drums in the basement and guitars, and his parents always let us hang out. And there were all these great pictures of comics on the walls. And I was a comic kid, so I'd always be staring at them and be like, that's Amazing Fantasy 15. Why is there a picture, like a photograph someone took of an issue, not a reproduction of the cover? And then eventually Carson said, oh, those are all my dad's old comics. He sold them to buy his first house. He took pictures of everything he sold before. So I've gotten to know Carson. Carson I've been friends with since I was 15, 14. I've known his parents forever. And now I talk with his dad about it. I found out his dad attended the first ever comic book convention. It was just in New York. Some fans got together and him and his cousin jumped on a bus because they went and just attended the first ever comic convention. So
that's awesome.
So much of that was just born right here. It was New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester, and the five boroughs. And all these creators where you could just go meet them, go knock on their door, go talk to them.
Yeah, you could just walk into Marvel Studio, you know, walk into the office and like half the time they would.
You hear so many stories like that of kids would just go like, here's the address. It's in every Marvel book. Let's just take a bus into the city and see what happens if we go. And then they'd just be hanging out all day and be like, there's John Romita Jr. They're just like right there. Weird. I think Steve Ditko just came by and dropped off a big envelope full of art. What? And you hear these stories and you're like, oh my goodness, it was so small back then.
Yeah, the fandom, it's you know, small but rabid. You know? And now it's comic conventions. I don't really even go to many of them anymore because I'm in a comic shop all damn day long. So every day is a kind of a mini convention for me. But also they became more of pop culture cons now with all the cosplay and all the manga and anime stuff, which is all great. It just doesn't resonate with an old white guy like me, you know? So,
yeah, it is. I do sometimes, it's funny because I've been to San Diego Comic-Con a bunch of times for different work stuff, but even that's very revealing because I've never been as a comic fan. I've been as someone who's worked in entertainment. Like if I'm acting on a TV show that needs to be promoted there, that's why I've been to Comic-Con, which is like, yeah. And I remember the very first time I went, I was so psyched and it was a crushing amount of people that gave me an actual panic attack. And I actually saw a dad there with his kid. This guy actually pushed me getting onto an escalator and I was like, whoa, dude. And he turned around, he was holding a toddler and he's like, I didn't know what this was and I got to get my kid out of here. I was like, dude, no worries. Push me all you want. I've been to New York Comic-Con. The costumes are cool, but it's a big spectacle. I do miss, and I'm sure you have a million stories from back in your being a fan days, working at Booten, working, being the weekend guy. Comic-Cons used to mean there were a few big ones throughout the year, but more often it was like, oh, somebody rented a ballroom at a Holiday Inn on Route 46 in Wayne, and there's just a bunch of people there. These are not flashy. There's nothing cool about it. It's literally just like, oh yeah, no, it's like a storage space in Totowa where you can go and there's five people selling back issues. And those were cool. And that might be the only place where you could get certain levels of back issues.
Oh, it's funny that you mentioned the Holiday Inn on 46 in Wayne, because that was exactly the spot where
notorious comic convention.
I would go. They would do like almost once a month, I think. And sometimes my dad would take me and, you know, we'd walk around together because he liked some comics. He liked Mad Magazine, stuff like that. So he was down with it. Other times my mother would just drop me off. She'd be like, here's $30. I'll pick you up in the lobby at 5 p.m., you know. And I was, you know, a kid. And that was before I discovered comic shops like Pegasus. So the only comics I could get were on the newsstands, you know, whatever I could grab, whatever happened to be there, whatever condition it was in. So going to these cons was my first experience of like, holy crap, anything you can think of is right here. You know, I would go in and blow through my whatever money I had within like the first 10 minutes, but walk around and meet some artists and things like that. And then I'd just go sit in the lobby with my stack of books and just wait for my mom to pick me up. Some of my happiest days of my life.
I have very similar memories of that. I mean, I said that Holiday Inn in Wayne for a reason because that was
the spot, man.
That was the spot, but there was nothing glamorous about it.
No.
It's like Paul Rudd is not going to swing through because Ant-Man is coming out at the Holiday Inn in Wayne. It's like some hardcore people, but also something that, again, I'll just be an old guy. I'll just be a guy in my 40s and I'll say, in the same way that Spotify and Tidal, it's amazing to have all of music at your fingertips. Like any song you can ever think of, you can get. But there's some people who go, I miss having to go track down the vinyl or the CD or to write down the lyrics on a radio because the song was so good and then go to a music store and say, I heard this song and the chorus went something like this. And they go, oh, that's the Pixies. Now you know about the Pixies. Like it is cool that kids can access it all now, but there was something magical about that. And a similar thing, like for example, and I think this will get your gears turning. I sit here and go, so I was born in 1980. Thor was very, very lame by the time I started reading comics when I was 7, 8, 9 years old. Thor was just in a stretch where he was a really lame character. Nobody liked him. But then you started to hear rumors of, oh, there was this one stretch of Thor in the early 80s by this guy, Walt Simonson. and it was amazing. And I'd be like, it's hard to believe, but you couldn't just go find it. It just lived as this legend of like, oh, there was actually this 3 or 4 year stretch where Thor was the best thing happening in comics. And you would hear that and go, how? And how do I find it? And that meant sometimes finding one random issue of it all beat up at like a baseball card store that threw a few comics off to the side. And you'd go, oh my God, it is good. What happened before this? What happened after this? And then eventually, maybe you get old enough and maybe they put out a collected edition and you're old enough to have disposable income. And now I have the Walt Simonson omnibus on my shelf. And I go, I spent like hundred something bucks on it to get them all at once. There was something really, really magical about some of those runs that lived in legend, you know, hearing about Frank Miller's Daredevil and grabbing a random issue of it and going, it looks so cool, you know? And then especially, you can tell, I really grew up entrenched with the Marvel stuff, but I all sides of it. Then you start to get to the point where some of the people who are really in the know are going, well, if you want something really cool, have you ever heard of Cerebus or, Scud the Disposable Assassin? And you're like, what are you talking about? But it was so hard to find that stuff, let alone the people who start getting into, you know, Love and Rockets and the Hernandez Brothers stuff and Fantagraphics and IDW. And you're like, oh, there's like levels of hipster. Like there's the Pixies of comic books. There's the non-mainstream underground stuff. And it was so hard to find. And you needed someone cool enough to know about it. And places that could actually get it to you. And it was almost impossible in a certain sense.
Well, I was lucky with that because I was working at Pegasus in the 90s. And so I had access to anything we could get. Like I would go through the previews catalog every month and pick out the weird stuff. You know, it got to the point where the owner, Pat, was like, all right, I'll handle all the Marvel, DC. He goes, you dig through the back of the catalog. You're good at picking out the weird stuff that's really going to pop, like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac or Scud. Or Lenore, books like that. And to this day, that's the one thing I really pride my store on, and I have the reputation for, is carrying a lot of the more esoteric outsider stuff, to the point where I've got 3 different customers who actually work at other local shops, but then come here to buy stuff because their shop doesn't carry some of the more obscure books that I do.
Whoa, that's a point of pride.
Oh yeah,
that's a
point of pride. I won't name any names, but yeah, I'm like, don't you work in such and such a shop? He's like, yeah, but they don't carry this stuff. I'm like, yeah, but you work there, can't you just order? Whatever.
And again, not to disparage our fellow nerdy brothers and sisters, but if there's 6 gaming tables set up, do they have room to stock, you know, a bunch of weird old stuff? Like, and this also makes me realize I got to just make a list with you and I got to start having you pull stuff because I have such a great appreciation for all the old indie comics. But like, I have 2 friends who run my buddy Will Hines and Kevin Hines, these comedians, they run a show called Screw It. We're just going to talk about comics. And they talk a lot about Marvel stuff and DC stuff, but they also did a whole season that's like, we're just going to break down Zot by Scott McCloud.
Nice.
And I'm listening to them describe it. And I'm like, this sounds amazing. This sounds both like a fun superhero comic, but one that was self-aware and kind of dissected the form along the way. But I'm also like, it's super hard to find. And I feel like you're the exact type of store owner that I'm like, someday I'm going to stop in without my kids so I don't have to chase them around. And I'm just going to go like, what are the 6 or 7 things that you can track down for me that are going to help me fill in my cred on the indie side of things?
I could do that. Absolutely. Plus, you know, I have a good relationship with all the other shops. You know, they're technically competitors, but I don't view it that way. And I hope they don't. We help each other out. If I'm missing something or another shop needs something that I've got extras of, we trade back and forth. So if there's something that I don't have, odds are I can get it through one of my many sources, you know.
Who are some of the shops still going that you know, in the spirit of like, oh no, there's a network of us and we talk. Like I know Time Warp, I know New World Manga's in the area. The one in South Plainfield, MC, I believe, is still going strong.
Yeah, you got Zap Comics in Wayne. You've got Joker's Child. Is that Fairlawn, I believe? You got Time Warp, like you said. Ray and Judy's Bookstop in Rockaway. That's an awesome spot. You got Expired Robot in Kenilon. He's a friend of mine. Funny Books in Lake Hiawatha. Have you ever been to Funny Books?
I've not been to Funny Books.
It's tiny. God bless Steve. I don't know how he does it. He keeps a very tight store, but it's a very small store. I'd go crazy if I was trapped in that little store all day. At least here, I've got some square footage. I can roam around, you know?
When they shut down, like Scotty's, right? Scotty's was in Madison forever. And I think it's shut down and it might still operate out in Dover as maybe as part of the Joe Kubert School.
Oh, yeah. Well,
facility.
Dewey's is back in Madison now.
Dewey's.
Yeah, they moved from Madison into the Kubert School in Dover years ago. And they recently moved back to Madison.
Oh, Dewey's. I'm thinking Scotty's Music was
Scotty's
in Madison.
Music
Dewey's,
was Dewey's down,
Comics.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. So Dewey's moved back.
Dewey's moved back. Actually, the owner.
That never happened.
The original owner, I forget his name. I think it's Dave of Dewey's, was in here Wednesday night. It was like 7:45. I had some of my regulars here. We closed at 8:00. Older guy comes in. I only met him once years ago, so I didn't recognize him. And he's looking around. I was like, hey, you know, do you need help? We're closing up in a few. And he bought a copy of Shazam. And then he's like, oh, the store looks great, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, thanks. He goes, yeah, I used to own Dewey's. I'm like, I thought you looked familiar. So, and we were talking about the new location. Like, what do you think? He's like, oh, it looks great over there, this and that. But yeah, he was here to buy a comic. He's the home Dewey's. And instead of going there, he popped into my humble little establishment. I should have snapped a picture with him. That would have been cool. But
it is great to hear that there's a sense of camaraderie amongst all the comic stores, amongst all the gaming stores. I know I've been clowning on them a little bit and talking about how I do appreciate you keeping it. And the fact that you and Highlander, I actually know one of the guys from Highlander, Anthony, is a fan of my comedy. And there was a stretch where I was doing a bit that I was going to go get full-time employment at Highlander Games. And I kept saying this in my public work that I'm going to quit comedy. And if you ever need to find me, come to Booten, I'll be at Highlander. Hearing that you have that symbiotic relationship, hearing that all these places feel less competitive and more in the spirit of, no, it's a special thing. Because at the end of the day, you and the other people who invest in stores like this and put a lot of time and effort into the community side of it and making people feel welcome, you're not just running a business. You are also keeping the spirit alive of a very specific type of art form that provides safe harbor to a certain type of young person historically. So hearing that that's a collaborative thing and you want each other to succeed, I go, yeah, you could get competitive with a store in Kinnelon, but in reality, moms and dads from Kinnelon probably aren't driving all the way to Whippany anyway. And if that store shuts down, it just means there's going to be some nerds in Kinnelon who don't have a place where they feel normal, you know, which for a lot of kids, comic book stores, gaming stores, if you're a certain type, you're cut from a certain type of cloth. And I say this from experience, comic book stores were some of the only places in my childhood where I could go in and go, oh, I can take a deep breath and let my goddamn guard down. Like, the bullies don't hang out at places like this. Nobody's going to make fun of me in a place like this.
Yeah.
I can hang out. I can go through the books. I can ask the older kids and even the people behind the counter, what am I missing? What's good? What's not? You know, like, I come in and buy my copy of X-Force that's in a sealed bag, and they kind of roll their eyes and go, I know I'm supposed to sell you two copies, but don't fall for this gimmick, you know? And I go, you're looking out for me. And there's a sense of community there. So hearing that all the stores in the area call each other, help share inventory when things are running out, help find rare books for each other's customers, it's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point in trying to be overly competitive because we all sell similar products in very different ways. I mean, you go to any one of these stores and everyone is different. Every store does their own thing, their own way. And so I'm not going to compete with a store like Zap. They've got, you know, a lot more manga than I carry. But I also know that my customers aren't really looking for that. But they're across from a high school, so they're going to move a lot more of that, you know, the young adult stuff and everything, just by where they are, their location. Location really dictates the kind of store you need to have. If I was in a mall, I'd have to carry Pokemon and all that. You just kind of have to.
Yeah.
But being where I am, this store is a destination. Nobody just wanders into Fatmoose, you know, because you got to find the goddamn place. You got to park around back, brave the 17 steps of doom. So when people come in here, it's very few people wander in and then don't hang out and buy something. It's always weird. Somebody can come in and look around for like an hour, every square inch of the store. And then thank you, goodbye, and leave without buying anything. I'm like, holy shit, I had nothing. Like, I didn't have one item in this store that person was interested in.
I wonder why they even made the trip.
Yeah, it's just weird. I'd never go into a shop like this without buying something, even if it's a goddamn pack of trading cards, just to support a business like this, you know?
Yeah. Well, we could talk all day. And sometimes I stop by the shop and we do. And it's lovely.
Yeah, I got to get you in. We have to do a shameless celebrity endorsement. because I have a YouTube channel for the store.
Listen,
so.
Always happy to do it. But in 2017, 2018, that would have been very effective. But I'm much less of a celebrity than I used to be. That being said, as I mentioned, like we do have, this is a New Jersey focused podcast and our people are out here and do like to support. So I just want to say for anybody listening, again, you're going to have a niece or nephew's birthday coming up, Christmas. Go to a store like this. Like, I know it's so easy to find out that you got some kid in your life who's into superheroes. And I know it's so easy to just Google Black Panther toys. But I'm telling you, every other kid in their class is going to have those same Black Panther toys because every other aunt and uncle is ordering the same thing off of Amazon. You go to Fat Moose, you look in the case, you're going to actually spend less money to support a small business. And you're going to get a toy where the kid in your life is going to feel like it's actually unique and interesting. And I'm telling you, like last time I was in, good example, I brought Cal and his buddy Killian in and they went nuts running around. And it was very funny for me because you and I are trying to catch up a little bit and talk about comics. And meanwhile, I just hear them going like, I want this, I want that. And I turn around, I'm like, I cannot afford to give you a full-size Captain America replica shield. I'm sorry, we're not buying a full-size that. And then they're running into the staff area and you're going, no, 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 no. And I'm like, guys, get out of here. But point being, they walked away with these two little Ant-Man toys. And my kid has held those in his hands so many hours of the day. He brings them to school and shows them to other kids. And there is a part of me that goes, there's a lot of other Ant-Man toys out there. My kid is the only one going, nobody, you guys, nobody else has this because you don't find it except at a place like Fat Moose. So again, thank you for doing what you do.
Absolutely.
Thanks for running a great store. And I really sincerely hope everybody drives by. I know you're all up and down Route 10 all the time. It's not too far from Route 287 or Route 80 as well. Legitimately, you jump off of either of those highways onto Route 10. You're at the store in 10 minutes. Take the time, support a small business, stock up for your gifts, birthday, Christmas, etc. And you're supporting a genuinely very cool, vital place that's one of the hubs in this circuit of not just a comic book business, but kind of the guardians of a whole oral tradition surrounding fandom, a whole tradition surrounding providing safe harbor for kids who feel like loners. This is legit. This is legit stuff. And the second you step into that stairway in Fat Moose, I think you'll go, oh, Chris was not bullshit. And like this place really, truly is that. And it's it's mind blowing. And it's an honor to help spread word for you.
Thank you. We pride ourselves on being very friendly with customers. You're never going to catch a bad attitude. You know, we're here to help.
It's the best. You know. I remember one of the first times I came in with my son, and Fat Moose is the first comic book store he ever steps foot in. And I'm happy about that. I have pictures of him in his first day next to the Wolverine cutout. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But I remember there were like five or six guys bullshitting, and then you guys were all laughing and telling jokes. And another thing I'll say, not that I care too much about this, but like you kind of motioned to everybody and pointed out my kid, and everybody kind of chilled out with some of the language that was being tossed around and still had a very animated conversation. But also it was very clear of like, hey, the kid's going to be in here for a half hour. And for that half hour, let's just everybody take a breath and let the kid feel welcome, which goes a long way too. So I just really love the way you run your place and I love the place itself.
Thanks,
and everybody
man.
Needs to go support it. Yeah, for sure. Fat Moose, it's right off of Route 10 in Whippany. Right near the old trains. You guys know exactly where I'm talking about. There's like four diners within spitting distance. You can go have a lunch, make a day of it.
The brewery across the street now, Double Tap Brewing. So you can grab a beer. It's a good time.
Yeah, there's so many reasons. So many reasons to go check it out. Thanks so much, Sean, for taking the time.
Thank you, Chris.
Hey, everybody. What's good? It's producer Carson Kopp here to wrap up the old episode for you. Comicdom. Holy moly. I'm going to give a big shout out to Geth for giving my dad, Mr. George Kopp, a huge shout out. Yeah, lucky kid. I had a cool dad. The coolest dad. God damn it. My dad's cooler than yours, bro. Great interview. I got to check out Fat Moose. I'm going to roll by sometime. And you should too. Gosh darn it. If you care about the modern day American mythology, which is comicdom in and of itself, the post-atomic pop culture Mount Olympus from America, made by Americans, damn it. Jack Kirby was a hard-nosed, hard-talking, cool dude who also possessed a kind and wise heart. He was like the customato of comic books. He was like this weird mystic who just hammered it out perfectly, channeled it from beyond the void. What the hell am I talking about? All right, I feel like I'm getting better at this, and I'm going to try to eliminate a little bit of redundancy. If you want to find us on Instagram, you can find us at New Jersey is the World. If you want to find us on the greater internet, you can find us at newjerseyistheworld.com or at patreon.com or wherever you find podcasts. Now, the most important part of these wrap-ups that I'm doing for you alls is that New Jersey is the World is a participatory project. We're a bunch of pinko commies over here. So, if you want to participate in this rolling circus that is New Jersey is the World, we need you. I implore you to call 973-780-4660. That's 973-780-4660. And leave us a message on our Google voicemail account in regards to anything New Jersey related. Crazy urban myths. Stupid stories with you and your friends. Comment on the show. Comment on things that you've heard. Comment on things that are conspicuously absent. And we'll review them and use them for cannon fodder on our show called The Garden State Gagoots, where all the hosts from all of the shows here on our lovely little network that is called New Jersey is the World sit around the old digital campfire and pull apart the best of the best of your absurd voicemails. That's all I got for you, ladies and gentlemen, this week. I'm going to keep it nice and tight. I hope everyone's having a lovely week. I hope you all have a lovely week. And we will speak to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, tell your friends, tell your family that which we already know to be true, which is that New Jersey is the world. Thank you all very much. Talk to you soon. Bye.